This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Tim Murray. As always, joined in the early days of the week by Adam Burke. Later this week, Matt Eumanns will jump aboard as we break down the week six card of college football as we are now into the month of October. But if you live in Las Vegas, you wouldn't know that because it's a billion degrees. But I digress. Adam, always great to talk to you. We're going to hit on Adam's updated power ratings article, which is available every Sunday on VSiN.com. We'll run through some potential situational spots, Heisman Trophy. I want to address it quickly and get it out of the way because we're a betting podcast. And let's be honest, I don't think people give a shit about conference realignment. What I would do if I were the Pac-12, as news is now coming out, that was reported a week ago that Gonzaga would be headed to the Pac-12, and you and I love our college hoops. What I would do if I were the Pac-12, as weird as this sounds, I would call up UConn, Adam. I'd say, hey, come join us, Notre Dame style. Play your football games in the Pac-12, and let's figure out an agreement for hoops. And you play four games against our conference each and every week. Or each and every year. That's what I would do. And I am done talking conference realignment. Congrats to UTEP for going to the Mountain West. Finn, I'm done. You, what do you say?
Yeah, I don't care. Whatever. Conference realignment is what it is. And look, I mean,
never going to stop.
No, it's never going to stop, at least until we get, you know, the complete super conferences where the college football playoff is just the SEC and the Big Ten. And that's basically it. So, look, that's what the expanded playoff was for, to get more teams from those conferences into the playoffs. So, you know, whatever. I do think that there should be more basketball-only and football-only members in some of these other conferences. You know, like Army doesn't need to be playing AAC basketball. It would be an absolute embarrassment for the program. Right. But Army playing AAC football is totally cool, totally fine. You know, obviously Gonzaga will be a basketball-only member of the Pac-12. You know, maybe some other sport, maybe there's some non-revenue sports as well. They won't be a football member of the Pac-12, but I would totally do that. I would completely embrace that. If you've got, you know, some of these teams, if I'm the Pac-12, like I'm going to look at South Dakota State for basketball, you know, being like, hey guys, like, you know, I'm sure you're happy in the Summit League, but you want to come play in the Pac-12 instead? And I wouldn't expect South Dakota State to play football in the Pac-12, although they very well could. But yeah, I think we should have more football only and basketball only members in these non-power conferences. And like the Pac-12, no matter who they bring in, will not be a power conference ever again.
No doubt about it. Fun for the college hoops heads, at least probably the death of the West Coast Conference and the Orleans for that always fun conference championship game, which pretty much was an annual showdown between St. Mary's and Gonzaga. But that ends the conference realignment chatter. And let's get into what you care about, which is betting on college football. And I'm curious now your thoughts on this. I have always been, from day one, the playoff expansion is awesome for this sport. I still think that Saturday, Friday night into Saturday, third weekend of December, is going to be tremendous with home games on conference field or on home fields. I still think that way. I know, you know, people are rolling their eyes. If Notre Dame runs the table with a loss to Northern Illinois, you know, they will get in more than likely. But I'm okay with it. And you know, not that this past Saturday night would have been an eliminator in the old college football playoff world, but still, that game was riveting. And now, if you want to make a case, do you make a case that Georgia sitting there at, you know, 6-1 to win the national championship plus 650 is worth a bet, you know, buying a little bit low. So look, I'm still excited for it. I think this is going to be fascinating. I don't know if people are upset that Ole Miss could still in theory bounce back after a loss to Kentucky, but I still think this is great for the sport. At some point, the higher powers that be, Adam, will mess it up because that's what they do. But right now, I think it's really fascinating. I think the group of five discussion, who will make it out of the G5, is super intriguing when you've got Liberty's game last week being canceled due to Hurricane Helene at Appalachian State. You've got Boise State looking like an absolute monster. UNLV's undefeated with another Power Four conference team on their schedule this weekend. So I have always been in favor of this. I don't think it waters down the sport. This past Saturday night was still amazing down there in Tuscaloosa, and I think the games still to come are going to be phenomenal.
Well, look, I mean, you know, the playoffs are the best part of any other sport, right? Like MLB playoffs starting here today. Obviously, I'm a baseball guy, and I do have series previews up for all the series. We'll be doing that throughout the playoffs as well. But the MLB playoffs, the intensity on every single pitch is unrivaled. You know, the NHL playoffs are obviously remarkably exciting. It's the only time of the year when a lot of casual hockey people watch the sport. And even people that don't like hockey wind up watching the sport. You know, we all know about the playoff in the NFL and the NBA and all of that, but college football needed this. You know, the Alabama-Georgia game was phenomenal, without a doubt. It was phenomenal. We may have four games like that in the first weekend of the playoff that have that kind of drama, that have that kind of back and forth. So, yeah, I definitely think it's great for the sport. I don't think it waters down the regular season at all because there is still a tremendous incentive in winning your conference and getting a bye and not worrying about that first weekend game. So, yeah, I think it's fantastic. I think it's great. And also, look, shit happens, man. Like, teams play bad. You know, Notre Dame plays bad against Northern Illinois. Is Notre Dame one of the top 12 teams in the country when all is said and done? Probably. Top 11, I guess, because, you know, the group of five. So, you know, look, like, things happen. And the fact that you had zero margin for error, I wasn't a huge fan of that. Now you at least have a little bit of margin for error. And so I think it's a positive thing all the way around. And look, as far as Georgia goes, the plus 650 price to me has nothing to do really with losing to Alabama other than, you know, yeah, they may not make the SEC championship game if they lose another game. I think it's more a reflection of how they looked in that Kentucky game and then following that up with the loss to Alabama, that this Georgia team, something just doesn't feel the same about them. And I don't know if it's Carson Beck. I don't know what it is necessarily, but something doesn't feel the same about this Georgia team, where maybe it's just back-to-back draft classes of losing an absurd amount of talent has caught up with them.
Yeah, it was a tale of two halves, as we all know, and Ryan Williams getting his flowers, rightfully so, the superstar wide receiver. My God.
Is he like a top 15 wide receiver in the NFL right now?
I don't know. That dude is unbelievable. And I know
him and Jeremiah Smith.
Jeremiah Smith with the one-handed catch at the end of the first half against Michigan State. I mean, these guys are freshmen, and it is unreal to think about how talented they are, and they get to stay in our sport for the next 3 years. So hopefully, knock on wood, nothing happens from an injury standpoint, but these dudes are unbelievable. And, you know, for Alabama to have the balls to go right back down the field after blowing a lead of 23? They're up 30-7, dominating that game every which way. And then it's 34-33. And you're like, uh-oh, here comes Georgia. They just took the lead. And milliseconds later, Jalen Milroe hits Ryan Williams and he pirouettes and does what he did along the sideline, which kind of leads me into the next discussion. And, you know, I feel like we've done a pretty decent job over the years finding some spots, even though Bo Nix may have not gotten home last year, CJ Stroud a couple of years ago, but finding a spot to bet on a player to win the Heisman Trophy. And I bet on Carson Beck last week, and it looked awful. Then it looked decent. And then he throws the interception in the end zone. I don't know if Colby Young didn't know what was happening there, but that was a bizarre interception in the end zone there at the end of the game. But looking at the Heisman market, and look, I have, you know, going back to over the summer, been a big believer in this is the way it is. Whether it's right or wrong, this is the way that it is. A quarterback on a top-tier team is going to win the Heisman Trophy. Since 2000, 18 quarterbacks, one wide receiver, three running backs, and those three running backs, Reggie Bush in 2005, number one, Mark Ingram, 2009, number one, Derrick Henry, 2015, number two. But Ashton Jeanty and Travis Hunter, I don't know if they will win this award, but we need to get to the point, and I get it. We're a betting podcast, and we want to know what we should be doing. I would not bet on Travis Hunter or Ashton Jeanty to win the Heisman Trophy, because I think Colorado, even though they showed out and won as a 2-touchdown underdog, I think more losses are coming. Ashton Jeanty is amazing. The level of competition is not necessarily there, even though he balled out against Oregon. Dude's averaging over 10 yards per carry. I don't know what to do from like a, this is the way it is versus this is the way it should be. Because Travis Hunter and Ashton Jeanty absolutely should be favored to win the Heisman Trophy. But the reality is, Adam, they will not win this award. In 2024, can we trust that the voting collective will figure this out? Or would you say that Travis Hunter and Ashton Jeanty are not worth a bet? Because I would still agree, even though those two young men are ridiculous and the numbers are saying that, I just don't think they can win the Heisman Trophy, even though they probably should.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so either, because we've kind of established that the Heisman Trophy is a team award as much as it is an individual award. So, I mean, Colorado, look, I will say this. I think Colorado is in much better shape in the Big 12 than they were in the Pac-12 last year. I think, first of all, we may be underappreciated just how awesome the Pac-12 was last season. And here in the Big 12, you know, Colorado's problem is in the trenches, right? Offensive and defensive lines. These teams in this conference are not nearly as physical as the teams that were in the Pac-12 last year. So I think Colorado may, when all is said and done, end up having a really good record. I mean, truth be told, there are definite landmines and games that they could lose, including this week at home against Kansas State. Or excuse me, next week at home against Kansas State. But I think they're going to perform just fine in the Big 12. I think we're kind of finding out maybe the Big 12 isn't really all that good. Jeanty, it's going to be, well, he didn't play anybody, right? That's what everyone's argument is going to be. And I mean, it's not that far off of an argument, but they did play Oregon. They did play Washington State. And, you know, I mean, the Mountain West, UNLV's ranked now. So, you know, maybe this conference is going to be a little bit better than people expected. But yeah, it's just way too hard to take one of these guys that are well down the board. The one I would say that maybe is at a little bit of a buy point right now is Dylan Gabriel, because he should put up numbers against Michigan State this week. Michigan State is improved, but they're still not that good of a football team. And then next week, he's got the showdown against Ohio State. And if Oregon wins that game, they are running the table. They're not going to lose to Purdue, Illinois. I think they lose to Michigan, despite Michigan, you know, beating USC a couple of weeks ago and then beating Minnesota. They're not losing to Maryland, Wisconsin. And then Washington's an interesting game, but they do get them at Autzen. So I think you bet Gabriel now at 14-1. He puts up good numbers next week, drops to 12, 10, something like that. And then if he beats Ohio State and balls out in the process, he's probably 450, 5-1, something like that. So I think now would be the time to bet on Gabriel. And that's about the only one that I would take a look at in the Heisman market right now.
Well, remember, you know, this offseason, there was sharp money on Dylan Gabriel to win the Heisman, and he became the favorite to win the Heisman, and has gotten off to a bit of a slow start. But yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that when you think about the high profile nature of that game, which, by the way, will be on primetime and NBC next weekend. So yeah, Friday night game this week, kind of island type of game. Look, Jalen Milroe has been unbelievable. And, you know, I wonder too a little bit about Cam Ward. You know, he's right now at DraftKings at 5-1 to win this award. They were very fortunate to beat Virginia Tech. And you look at the schedule, I know College Game Day is headed out to Berkeley this weekend, but Miami, does Cam Ward really have that opportunity to shine? You know, we always talk about the Heisman moment. Well, when you look at Cam Ward in this Miami schedule, you know, the ACC's down. They go to Louisville in a couple of weeks, which will be an intriguing game. Louisville, you know, just lost to Notre Dame in kind of a funky game in South Bend. The Florida State game, obviously, there's no buzz there anymore because Florida State is god-awful. They should play Clemson in the ACC championship, but is that too little too late? So I do wonder a little bit about Cam Ward. Once again, to bring it back to, it shouldn't matter, but the reality we live in is that you need those, quote, Heisman moments. And, you know, RG3 may have won this award back in 2011, but he had the Heisman moment against Oklahoma and everything else kind of fell apart and his numbers were just so outrageous. So I can't wait to see how this unfolds. Right now, the only ticket that seems live for me is Nico Iamaleava, which has actually trickled back towards the market. I got it at 18 to 1 over the summer, and right now it's 15 to 1 at DraftKings, so not much great value, so to speak, there. Carson Beck, I bought at 20 to 1 last week. He's now 30 to 1. KJ Jefferson and Kyren Drones are my two long shots. They're not winning the Heisman Trophy. So, yeah, I'm debating whether or not to jump in on kind of where your mindset is. Dylan Gabriel, by the way, just always shop around. DraftKings Dylan Gabriel's 14 to 1. I just pulled up the Circa app. It's 8 to 1. So make sure you get the best number that is out there, especially in the futures market. So any other thoughts on the Heisman before we head into your power ratings?
No, I mean, I think Nico Iamaleava, man, I swear, one of these times I'm actually going to get that kid's name right. Arkansas and Florida, the next two games, then the showdown with Alabama, where, again, same theory as Dylan Gabriel, right? If he balls out in that signature game and they win it, well, he's not 15 to 1 anymore. By the way, Gabriel 18 to 1 hanging out there at FanDuel. Ooh. So a little bit better of a price there. You know, something that's more accessible for our listeners than what Circa has. But it is astounding, right, that you have Circa at 8 to 1 and a widely available, pretty recreational book like FanDuel showing Gabriel at 18 to 1. Like that's a massive, massive difference where if Gabriel beats Ohio State and stays healthy, he's getting an invite to New York. Whether or not he can top Jalen Milroe depends on what happens the rest of the way with Alabama, who has a dramatically more difficult schedule than the Ducks do.
Yeah, I'm just looking right now. I just pull up a different app here in town, Westgate Superbook. Dylan Gabriel, 14 to 1 there. So Circa, by far and away, the lowest in the market on Dylan Gabriel. And I don't know if that has to do because they have the two-way market, if they have massive liability on Dylan Gabriel, whatever it may be. But definitely don't buy Dylan Gabriel at Circa, that's for sure, if you're looking to bet on Dylan Gabriel. All right, let's jump into your power ratings, Adam, because each and every week on VSiN.com, Adam puts up his updated power ratings and then some edges that are out there. And I'm feeling patriotic today, so let's start with the Americas. We'll start with Navy and Army. You know, I think I said it on the podcast where Navy was clearly in a tricky spot where you're coming off a big win over Memphis and you're going to Air Force the following week, but I just can't trust UAB. I can't trust Trent Dilfer. And boy, was I happy that I did not bet UAB in that spot. I even talked about it on the VSiN tailgate show on Saturday morning saying this was a sandwich spot, but I can't get to the window on it. So let's start with Navy. They have continued to look the part. What have you done with Navy's power rating as they head out to Colorado Springs for an early kickoff, 10 a.m. local against the Falcons?
Man, Air Force looks terrible. Like, I can't remember a Troy Calhoun. They had a 2-10 team, right? And I can't remember it being remotely as bad as this one has looked here. So Navy, a monster road favorite, deservedly so. A 6-point upgrade for me for them. And I believe it's the second straight week I've upgraded them 6 points, I want to say. So, you know, I've given this team a couple of really big bumps here. And last week, even though my power ratings didn't tell me to play it against UAB, I played it anyway because this team is just a juggernaut. And look, they threw for 225 yards against UAB, ran for 227. This is a different Navy team with Drew Cronick's offense. And so 6-point bump, biggest bump of the week for me.
Navy hasn't won the Commander-in-Chief Trophy since 2019. That year, they swept Air Force and Army, and they have not beaten Air Force since that 2019 season, but they are significant favorites to do so. By the way, for those wondering, Army-Navy, if you go and read the bylaws, they have come to an agreement now that Army is in the AAC that the Army-Navy game will always be a non-conference game. These two teams will never play in the regular season unless they have to meet in the championship game. So there is a scenario out there, Adam, where Army and Navy play in back-to-back weeks. And wouldn't it be crazy if both of these programs were vying for a playoff spot? Boy, that if you want chaos, hope that Army and Navy or Navy because they both play Notre Dame, pull off that upset and head into that game against each other undefeated. A lot of ways to go, but there is some potential serious chaos scenarios out there. All right, speaking of Army, they got it done again. First time since 1945 that Army and Navy are undefeated, or 4-0, I should say, to start the season. So what did you do with the Black Knights as they got another victory last week?
Yeah, 3-point bump for them against Temple. I mean, that was a game I watched with our friend Ben Wilson over at the Durango Sportsbook. Had the over in that game, which fortunately got there because, man, Temple just looked all out of sorts in that game. But Army looks great, man. +3 bump for Army this week. Tied for the second biggest bump for me. UConn's in the middle. I gave UConn a 5-point bump. They destroyed Buffalo a week after destroying Florida Atlantic. They're playing really well on offense. This UConn team, very, very impressive so far this season. So Navy, UConn, and Army, three of the biggest bumps for me. Teams that obviously are kind of off the radar a little bit, but I love the scenario you threw out there about Army-Navy possibly in the AAC title game and then the Army-Navy neutral site game the week after.
Yeah, because remember, the AAC championship is on a campus, so they would be at one of their on one of their campuses, and then they would play each other in Philadelphia. Looking at Army's schedule right now, are they an underdog at all? But I mean, other than Notre Dame at Yankee Stadium, you've got Tulsa this week, East Carolina at home, UAB at home. I flip-flopped those games. Air Force, I think that, I got to double check. I can't remember if that's neutral or not. At North Texas, Notre Dame, UTSA. Army might be a favorite in every AAC game moving forward.
I have them a pick 'em on the road at North Texas.
Okay.
But that game might have 115 points. Like, Army will not get stopped in that game at all. North Texas has no defense whatsoever, but their offense is phenomenal. Like, it's really hard to bet high totals in Service Academy games because they could bleed an 11-minute drive and you're just dead in the water. That game might have 100 points.
Yeah, I mean, the way those two teams are playing right now, I wanted to pull it up real quickly. The AAC futures, Tulane is the favorite at +135, Memphis +380, Army 5-1, Navy +650. So, man, it could definitely be a weird scenario. A couple of years ago, when I was on the Navy broadcast team in 2016, Navy did make and hosted the AAC championship game. And their quarterback, Will Worth, got hurt in that game against Temple. Temple won the game, and then Navy was banged up going into the Army-Navy game and actually lost that game. I think it was the first time in over a decade they had lost to Army in that Army-Navy game. But both of them are playing well right now.
It's too bad. So November 16th is Navy and Tulane. Army does not play Tulane in the regular season. But November 16th, Navy and Tulane. Unfortunately, you've got Georgia-Tennessee that week. So College Game Day will be in Athens, but it would have been fascinating to see College Game Day, you know, up there in Annapolis for the game against Tulane.
Yeah, that would be pretty neat considering we see a new site this week. All right, UConn +5. A hat tip to our good friend Brad Powers. That was his best bet on VSiN Primetime on Wednesday. I tailed it and gave it out here on the podcast. A nice, easy, no sweat winner. It's nice to have one of those every once in a while, as they absolutely obliterated Buffalo in a tough spot for Buffalo. And UConn might just not be terrible. And like I said, to start the podcast, hey, maybe the Pac-12 gives them a shout. All right, a couple other teams on your stock report on the uptick. Let's go to Indiana. Kirk Cignetti, they are now one win away from eclipsing their win total. Shouts to Wes Reynolds on this podcast and in the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, Adam. He wrote up Indiana to go over 5.5 wins is one of his best bets. I don't know. Maybe I'm mushing it right now because we gave it out here on this podcast, but I feel confident that one's going to come home. They're 5-0 and they play Northwestern this week, where they're a 2-touchdown favorite. Indiana, man, could we be talking about a 9-0 or 10-0 Indiana heading into the month of November? What did you do with the Hoosiers?
They should be. I have them at least a 4-point favorite in every game until they play Ohio State, where they're getting 17.5 for me. 3-point bump for the Hoosiers. I think I've bumped them every single week this season, or at least very, very close to it based on the body of work. That being said, FIU is terrible. UCLA is awful. Charlotte's bad. Maryland's really not very good either. Billy Edwards is playing fine, but that team's just not really going anywhere right now. Neither is Northwestern, I don't think. So they deserve to be a huge favorite in this game. They'll finally get a test, I think, from Nebraska at home in week 8, Washington in week 9. But I mean, for right now, Indiana is doing exactly what they're supposed to do against inferior competition. So this is a team that I don't want to step in front of right now. So gave them a 3-point bump. And like I said, I think I've bumped them every week so far here this season.
Yeah, I stepped in front of them last week and they turned the ball over a bunch. They had 3 turnovers and Maryland went 3 and out on all 3 of those turnovers. Not ideal when you have the dog catching 7. So we will see how it all plays out. All right, before we wrap, we'll take a quick break. We'll do his stock down and take a look at some situational spots here. Any other teams you want to note from a positive standpoint that you upgraded in your power ratings?
No, I'm just looking here. I'm trying to see how much I've upgraded Indiana. So I've upgraded Indiana 2 full touchdowns since the start of the season. I've given them a 14-point increase in my power rating since where I had them. So on one hand, you could say, man, Adam, you didn't do your research on this team and you had them way too low. But on the other hand, I just think Kurt Cignetti and what he's doing with this program and with Nathan Rourke Curtis Rourke specifically, very, very impressive for them. A couple of other teams I bumped. Obviously, you have to bump Kentucky, right? After going on the road to Oxford, beating Ole Miss, maybe could have, would have, should have beaten Georgia a couple of weeks ago. I still don't know if this offense is any good, but gave Kentucky a 3-point bump. The other one is James Madison. So they've scored 133 points in their last 2 games. 63 against Ball State.
Chirp,
Ball
chirp, State was not really chirping bad. Much, very much there down in Harrisonburg.
But, man, Alonzo Barrett's running that offense. And Bob Chesney seems to be enjoying the move from Holy Cross to James Madison. So 3-point bump for the Dukes as well.
Our good friend Chris the Bear Felica, who is in the Friday Football Invitational, courtesy of Circa, he always says to close out his podcast, the less you bet, the more you lose when you win. It's kind of the way I'm feeling on my Indiana win total. I put a unit on it, but man, I should have put 27 units on it because that win total seems like it's going to fly over 5.5, and the juice was pretty reasonable. We talked about it on the podcast. I think the juice is minus 125. At stations here in town late in the summer. So, yeah, Indiana cruising towards an over. And the only, I guess, win total that was easier was Florida State under their 9.5 win total. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll run through some of the teams that Adam downgraded in his power ratings. We'll take a look at some of the Week 6 lines, as well as hit some situational spots as well. Stick around. More to come on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Let's do a little housekeeping here, Adam. Let's promote what's going on at VSiN. If you like your college football chatter, we'll have another VSiN College Football Betting Podcast later on this week. Myself, Matt Eumanns. Eumanns coming off a big week. I think 4-1 on official plays, and he also threw out Indiana, so he had a good week. 500 week for me, so not catastrophe, but we need to do better. And then on Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern time, the VSiN College Football Tailgate Show. So a little housekeeping on the college football front. Adam, what's going on at the website right now?
A lot, man. We got a lot going on. NHL betting guide is out. The NHL season actually starts across the pond here in a couple of days. It is the Sabres and the Devils are playing. I believe in Sweden. They're playing in Prague. So they're playing in the Czech Republic. So NHL season starts on Friday here with the Devils and the Sabres. So my NHL betting guide is out. I will be posting that content to the website here later today on Tuesday. Haven't gotten around to that yet. But we have over 50 college football and NFL combined articles throughout the course of the week over there for you to check out as well. And not only that, our good friend Jonathan Von Tobel, who of course you host VSiN Primetime with, him and my senior editor, Zachary Cohen, my right-hand man, along with Kelly Bidlin, putting together our NBA betting guide, which comes out on October 10th. So that comes out 2 weeks in advance of the NBA season. So you'll be able to get that if you are a VSiN Pro subscriber over at VSiN.com next week.
So there you go, VSiN Pro. That's the way to go. And VSiN.com/subscribe to get everything that we've got going for you, as well as all the picks Friday night, courtesy of the Circa Friday Football Invitational. All right, let's get back into it. Adam, once again, one of the many articles over there is Adam's updated power ratings. And let's go into stock down. UCF was a team that I actually didn't bet anything on them in the futures market. We talked about them a decent amount on the podcast. I did bet KJ Jefferson at 150-1 to win the Heisman. That's not going to happen. But I didn't want to bet their win total. I thought about betting them maybe to win the Big 12. It feel like high upside, but potential low downside there on UCF. They go out as a 14-point favorite. Seemed like there was some sharp money in the market on the Knights. Good situational spot for them. And they got clowned by Colorado. Credit to Colorado, the better team. They were able to throw on UCF. But what did you do with the Fighting Gus Malzahns?
Yeah, 4-point downgrade for UCF here. This is a play that I liked last week. This is a play that I made last week. I had a decent week otherwise, but definitely not in that game there, where I thought, you know, for Colorado, long travel. And by the way, this is something just for a sidebar here. There are a lot of weird travel spots here this week because of conference realignment. So you've got some teams that are going on the road playing in places they almost never go. Michigan State's going to Eugene on a short week. Va Tech's going to Palo Alto to take on Stanford. Miami going to Berkeley, as you mentioned. Cal hosting College Game Day this week. USC going to Minneapolis. Michigan's finally playing on the road. They're going to Seattle. UCLA is in Happy Valley. And you had this one here where the boys from Boulder went down to Orlando, where the hurricane had just gone through. It was grossly humid and disgusting down there. It was very, very hot. And I thought, look, Colorado's going to wear down in the second half of this game. And that's where UCF will be able to make some hay, take full advantage. It wasn't really a game from the jump. So very impressive performance from Colorado, very unimpressive performance from UCF. So the Knights, among my top drops this week here at -4 points in my power ratings.
Yeah, that was pretty surprising to see. And, you know, tip of the cap to Colorado coming off of a very fortunate win over Baylor. You needed a Hail Mary to force overtime, a missed field goal. They win in overtime. And I thought it was going to be a letdown spot. I didn't get to the window. I just didn't want to lay 14. But boy, that was a great performance to see from Colorado, who, you know, can run the ball a little bit now too, which is something that we couldn't say for many, many years. But they got dudes at wide receiver, no doubt. Will Shepard had a big game. Travis Hunter, obviously. Jimmy Horn Jr., LaJonte Webster. They got some dudes out there. So we'll see. Colorado off this week, moving forward. Kansas State, as you alluded to earlier in the show, that'll be a late night game in Boulder, 10:15 Eastern. Wonder if that'll be the Stormy special. By the way, our colleague Stormy Bonatoni on a monster game this week. She will be paired up with Joe Tessitore and Jesse Palmer. She's headed down to Kyle Field for Texas A&M and Missouri, the only top 25 matchup of the weekend. So excited for Stormy to be on that big time game down there in College Station as Texas A&M hosts Missouri. All right, a couple other stock downs for you. Let's stay with the 4-point drops. San Diego State, I don't know what to make of this San Diego State team. You know, Sean Lewis, you look at the team he used to coach for, they are an absolute train wreck. Kent State, again, did not cover last week. But San Diego State, they go out to Mount Pleasant and they lose to Central Michigan. So they play Hawaii this week at home. They're a short favorite, a Hawaii team that I was kind of high on just over their win total. This would be a big one for me if Hawaii can win this game on the mainland. What do you make of the Aztecs?
Well, they suck, Tim. They are bad.
I will talk more poorly about them if they lose this week, please. I would much appreciate a Hawaii win.
I mean, they gave up 450 yards in this game. They got shut out in the second half on offense, which Sean Lewis's thing is supposed to be offense. And they got blanked by Oregon State, 10 points at Cal, shut out in the second half here by Central Michigan. They're +3 in turnover margin and only scored 21 points in this game. So that was a big, you know, downgrade for me, and maybe not even enough. But when you're +3 or something akin to that in turnover margin and you still lose the game and still go up a bunch of yardage, that's a really, really big problem. So 4-point drop for San Diego State here. I don't know, man. I mean, that guy had, Sean Lewis had one really good year at Kent State, kind of built that program up from absolutely nothing. And since then, you know, he's kind of been a coordinator or he's been a bad head coach. So I don't know. The Aztecs are not in good shape right now.
Yeah. And once again, Sean Lewis, my good friend, John Schaefer's the voice of San Diego State football. I'm pulling for you after this week. I need my boy, Timmy Chang, to come through with a win. A couple other notable drops for you. New Mexico State, they lose against New Mexico. I don't think they covered either. Would that number close like 9?
Yeah, it was 8 or 9, something like that. I only had it 2, 40. So I adjusted both of them. That was just a market correction more than anything.
And then Rice, you dropped 4. UCLA, I'll quote you, quote, holy hell, this team is terrible, and the Big Ten is going to eat them alive. Once again, Adam, I need to solely stick to just futures because UCLA under, Indiana over, those have been feeling pretty good. We're going to be sweating out a couple others, certainly, but UCLA, I didn't see it. They should have lost to Hawaii out on the island week 1. Yeah, they are bad, but they are in a pretty unique spot this week, which we'll talk about in some situational angles here shortly. But what did you make of anyone else worth noting in your power ratings on a drop level?
Yeah, just some market corrections. I mean, I dropped Ball State 3 points. I had them a pick 'em against Central Michigan 2 weeks ago. They were +6. They covered the number. They only lost by 3. But then my line was off again last week. So, you know, had to make an adjustment there. Made a market correction to UAB as well. You know, that line I had UAB -0.5 point, I think it was. Navy closed, 4.5, covered with ease. And like I said, I wound up taking Navy. Like, my power ratings are not the be-all, end-all for me. I'm trying to get some line value and some line equity early in the week. But once I get later into the week and I start handicapping the games from more of a qualitative standpoint, I don't look too much at my power ratings at that point in time. So that's why I just went ahead and took Navy, even though my power ratings didn't really tell me to do it. I adjusted those two teams that combined 9 points here. So I would have Navy over a touchdown favorite if we ran that game back this week. So you know, that's just what you have to do. You just have to adapt and be willing to recognize the fact that, hey, you were either wrong on some teams by not adjusting them enough during the season, or you know, your priors just haven't caught up enough from the research that you did over the summer. So yeah, I definitely made some very significant moves here, you know, with these teams.
All right, let's run through some situational spots. Every Wednesday on VSiN Primetime, I go through the letdown spots and if there are look-ahead spots. So as always, I say the disclaimer every week. These are not blind bets by me, but I like to look at situational angles. And sometimes I bet them. Sometimes, like UAB last week, I said the situation's right, but I can't trust Trent Dilfer. Maybe Navy's just really good. So let's run through a couple letdowns. And I think Virginia Tech is in a really weird spot. You lose that game in the fashion that they did. It's been a disappointing year. They're now 2-3, Adam. And now you got to go on the road to Stanford, where it's going to be a empty stadium, essentially. And they're laying 9. Now, worth noting, Circa opened this game 3. How does Virginia Tech get off the mat after they've now lost 3 games this year? And you could make a strong argument they were the better team last Saturday against Miami. So I haven't gotten to the window yet, but man, Stanford +9 at home, 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 local, just a weird spot for the Hokies. And you've got to figure out a way to rebound after having your hearts ripped out. They called it a touchdown on the field and then they took it away because apparently, you know, the player was out of bounds who was touching the ball. How does Virginia Tech respond to that devastating loss? They're now 2-3.
Yeah, I don't know. Especially, like I said, to go all the way out to Palo Alto and take on Stanford. I have this one power rated 9. So I'm on the market. It moved in my direction. I would have jumped on that Circa number, but with the Browns in town this weekend, I had some friends in town. So, you know, wasn't really in a position to jump in on that one. But look, I mean, yeah, from a spot standpoint, it's definitely a very challenging one for Virginia Tech. Not only the disappointment of last week, also the travel to a place where you've never played before. Not that it's going to be that hostile of an environment. But the other thing is just, you know, there are 23 road favorites in college football this week as of right now, as we're recording this. I personally have 26 road favorites in my power ratings out of 49 games. So basically about half of the card is road favorites this week. Some of the ugly dogs at home are going to cover. And this may very well be one of them where I don't think Stanford is any good by any means, but still, I mean, this is the right type of spot where you want to take a bad team, especially because, you know, so Stanford last week, and I'm glad that we're actually talking about this game because there's something that needs to be brought up. So Stanford, they go to Syracuse and win, right? Yep. They have the long trip back to Greenville to take on Clemson. They had major travel disruptions. Understandably so. Greenville's had no power. Our good buddy Tyler Shoemaker has been without it for a while. So they have travel issues. I think they got to Clemson like late Friday night or something like that. Had to turn around and play right away. And in that game, even though the final score looked special, Clemson had two different one-play 34-yard touchdown drives and a two-play 43-yard touchdown drive. So it's not like Stanford just gave up long backbreaking drives or anything like that. They just gave up some explosives. So I think that box score was a little bit misleading last week. I think Stanford is worthy of a look here over a touchdown at home.
Yeah, something to keep an eye on. Ashton Daniels left the Clemson game, I think, with an ankle injury. He threw three picks, too. He's very up and down. But I think Stanford probably will be on the card come Thursday. And you mentioned home dogs. Cal, I mean, the Bay Area this weekend. Cal catching 10.5 against Miami, and Stanford catching 9 at home against Virginia Tech could very interesting to look at some of those home dogs that, you know, I like home dogs. Matt Eumanns might like home dogs more than anyone. Speaking of home dogs in a situational angle, how about Vanderbilt? Diego Pavia, there we go, got the right transfer. Diego Pavia and the Commodores taking on Alabama. Can you hold your nose and hold on to your butts and take the Commodores plus 23 against Bama?
I don't think I can. I actually have this one power rated 30. So this is one of my biggest overlays here of the week. So I guess my power rating is wrong on Vanderbilt because I think where I have Alabama is very, very reasonable. I had Georgia minus 3 last week was my closing line, or was my power rating line for that game. Made adjustments for both teams. Look, I get it. At the same time, you know, it's going to be an Alabama crowd, right? It's going to be like 3/4, 80% Crimson Tide fans or more. Vanderbilt just has zero home field advantage. And the other thing is, now Jalen Milroe is the Heisman favorite. Like, Kalen DeBoer could play easy pitch and catch with him for 3/4 in this game, and they could still go out there and cover the number. It's an awful spot, but I don't know. I would rather play situational spots with teams that already aren't very good or maybe top out at mediocre. I don't really want to fade elite teams just because of a bad spot.
Yeah, and this is really going to tell you, right? Because over the years, Nick Saban basically was let down proof. And we get to learn about Kalen DeBoer here. Not that we don't know about Kalen DeBoer. He's proven to be a pretty elite coach, but this is a big spot for Alabama. Vanderbilt coming off a bye. Their most recent game was devastating as well. So worth noting, Vanderbilt at home, in air quotes, because like you're right, Crimson Tide fans will certainly take over that spot there. But catching 23, if we get it, can we get a 24? Maybe I'll do a little bit on Vanderbilt. Maybe they'll be on the card later this week. What about Arizona? Arizona, kind of disappointing so far this year. And they get a big win on the road up in Salt Lake City. And now they're laying 6 against Texas Tech. So is this a tricky spot for the Wildcats after they go up to Salt Lake City and in the late night spot win comfortably? Texas Tech last week gets the win against Cincinnati, 44-41, kind of a crazy game there. Baron Morton, 19 of 21. They were actually outgained by like 60 plus yards, and that one gave up a ton of passing yards. So Texas Tech, I would love this spot at home, but they are on the road at Arizona. Arizona coming off the big win.
It's a difficult spot for me because I haven't been able to power rate Texas Tech accurately really at any point. throughout the course of this season here. You know, the 37-16 loss at Washington State is something that still really, really stands out in my mind, because that's a game where Texas Tech had 491 yards of offense. They're just -3 in turnover margin. They had 4 turnovers in that game, 2 fumbles, 2 picks. I think this team is pretty decent, and I think there's been some decent influential money that's come in on this team that has been interested in them. At the same time, like, you could kind of feel that performance coming for Arizona last week, right? I mean, they're a really good team. They were coming off of a very bad performance against Kansas State, and they're coming off of a bye. And I don't know that Brent Brennan is Jed Fish necessarily, but Brennan's a good head coach. You know, he made a lot of, you know, limited ingredients there at San Jose State. I think you can kind of feel that performance coming against Utah. I don't know what to feel about the performance in this game, but I will say this. If they go out there and play well against Texas Tech, they're back in elevation in Provo on October 12th against BYU. That's probably the spot to look to go against Arizona.
By the way, just worth noting, and I bet on Baylor last week, and it looked awful from the jump, and then it got a little better, but we didn't get there, obviously. Parker Fleming at Statso War, he puts out this graphic every week. He calls it, "Did we really get beat that bad?" 2 weeks ago, the number one team on a "our team didn't get beat that bad" meter was Kansas State. And this week, number 4 is Baylor. So is BYU good? Are they a little fugazi or a little somewhere in between? I guess we'll find out at some point, but they are still still undefeated, are the BYU Cougars. All right, I got a spot for you that I think you'll like, because you love your some midweek games. How about Sam Houston State, the Bearcats? They scored 19 unanswered points against Texas State, kicked a game-winning field goal with 5 seconds to go, Adam, to get a win over what is believed to be the best team, or at the time, best team in the Sun Belt. Remember all the love that was out there. Texas State closed as a 3-point favorite against Arizona State, lost that game by 3. And Sam Houston State, after that win, now has to go on the road to one of the most gorgeous stadiums in college football, a proud new member of the Mountain West, UTEP. UTEP catching 10.5 at home. You mentioned ugly dogs. Is Sam Houston State prime for a letdown spot here after their heroic win last week?
I got to be honest with you. I might lay chalk in both those Thursday games. I'll write those previews up today over at vsin.com. But look, I mean, I have Texas State -13. I have Sam Houston State -12 in those two games there. UTEP's really, really bad. You know, Scotty Walden was supposed to come in and be a guy to kind of inject a little bit of life offensively into this football team. It has not happened. 7 points against Nebraska. They lost to Southern Utah, the FCS program. 28-10 against Liberty. Liberty just seems to be kind of going through the motions this year. And then lost by 10 to Colorado State, where it was in Fort Collins, but the Rams have been one of the most disappointing teams this season, in my estimation, where I thought with Fowler Nicolosi and some of their wide receivers, they would look better. You know, it's kind of Jay Norvell's time to look better there with that program, and it hasn't happened. So I've been really disappointed in what we've seen out of UTEP here so far this season. The only holdup for me is that, generally speaking, Sam Houston State's offense really isn't that great. They're kind of a defense-first type of team. It's definitely a bad spot. There's no doubt about that. I'm kind of hoping that that narrative pulls this thing down under 10. I don't know that it will. I don't think that there will be enough people really looking to fire away on Sam Houston State and UTEP on Thursday night. But I like the Bearcats on the whole. And the Bearcats have also been a team that a lot of influential sharp money has come in on throughout the course of the season here. Didn't really happen last week against Texas State, but it has happened previously. So I'll be curious to see what the tug of war looks like for this number. But I just think UTEP is that bad that I don't even know if they can take advantage of it.
UTEP is coming off a bye. So rest advantage and a potential letdown for Sam Houston State. But it also matters about who's on the field. Also tends to concern you as well. Two others for possible letdown spots. Duke, 20 down, and this one really hurt because I had UNC +3, so we got to the window. I also had some UNC money line. Mac Brown, it's time to go. This, what a disaster. How do you lose this game being up 20-0? Manny Diaz gets revenge against the guy who fired him 11 years ago as a defensive coordinator of Texas. But Duke wins this rivalry game. They're now 5-0. They are not that good of a football team, just putting that out there. Duke is taking on Georgia Tech this week, and there are some sevens out there, mostly 7.5s. Does Duke bounce back again, 5-0, catching 7.5 against the Ramblin' Wreck?
Well, if I did anything with this game, it would be to take Georgia Tech. I have it lined 11, first of all. So this one may be a case where everything aligns. Like I said, I don't want to fade great teams just because of situational spots. Duke is not a great team. I mean, as much as I've bumped up UConn, I mean, they won that game by 5. Middle Tennessee is pathetic. I don't really put too much stock into that one.
They should have lost to Northwestern.
Yeah, they should have lost to Northwestern. That was a game where I did actually have the Wildcats. I'm pissed because my alt over 8.5 for North Carolina is dead in the water, blowing that game. But Duke is a team that I actively want to fade. And I think Georgia Tech, off of a bye with a good head coach, you know, already 0-2 in SEC or in ACC play, right? Because the Florida State game was not.
That was a conference game. Okay. Yep.
So, but they have lost their last two ACC games. So it's kind of a get right spot for Georgia Tech, I think, here. Like I said, I have it 11. The spot kind of favors them. The rest advantage favors them as well. Duke off of a rivalry game, all these different types of things. The spots just kind of help, where Duke is just a team I want to fade to begin with, and my power ratings agree with it.
Yeah, don't lay 7.5. I think we get back to 7. We were at 7 all day on Monday. It's now 7.5. Money came in on the Ramblin' Wreck on Tuesday morning. I would think we get back to 7 here in this spot. All right, one final spot I wanted to note, because last week, my favorite bet of the week, and we had an impromptu podcast on Wednesday with JVT, and hopefully all of you followed the UNLV side. Me, Matt Humans, JVT, Brad Powers, we all loved UNLV, so this was a massive overreaction, and they were fired up. And Haj Malik Williams looked better than Matthew Soluka. It looked like Barry Odom and company made a mistake with the wrong quarterback playing the first couple of weeks. UNLV now getting a whole lot of love, understandably so. You're still at home. Barry Odom is the best cover coach in college football since he got to UNLV. That said, if we get to 7, do we have to look at Syracuse here? UNLV is, it almost feels like, I don't want to get in front of something that is so good, but it feels like this is the week where everyone's kind of been applauding UNLV for the decision that they made, all of that. They looked amazing. Is this a tricky spot for them at home against Syracuse coming in on a Friday night?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, it's certainly a talent upgrade from, you know, what they've played here so far this season, where I think Kansas is really bad this year. I think losing Andy Kotelnicki has hurt them. I think all of the injuries that Jalen Daniels has gone through have really hurt him. It was a nice win, and the box score was a little bit misleading. They should have won that game by more than 3. They were definitely the better team in that game. But, I mean, Fresno State, like, they lost their head coach a month before the season, where Jeff Tedford stepped down due to medical reasons. So Fresno State's kind of been in a state of flux anyway. And then, you know, like, Houston's not any good. In fact, they're quite bad. If you look at some of their yards per play, differential metrics, stuff like that, they're pretty bad. Syracuse has got talent. I mean, Kyle McCord's playing well there. Rondae Gadsden, who missed all of last season, looks good. LaQuint Allen looks good as well. They've got skill position talent. UNLV's defense really hasn't been tested yet. I think UNLV's defense gets tested in this game. I agree with this. I don't know if this one probably does touch 7. I think there's a chance that it does. I mean, I think Syracuse would be the play here. I personally have it 5.5. So I do think the opener was a little bit light. But I think this is one of those games where UNLV maybe gets a little bit of a wake-up call playing against a, you know, Power 4 conference opponent that has a lot of talent, particularly on offense.
Yeah, if it gets to 7, I think I'll take 7 with Syracuse here. Should be a decent crowd, I think, on a Friday night. Obviously, they don't fill up Allegiant Stadium, but UNLV, now you have tape on Haj Malik Williams, too. I know you had tape on him from Campbell, but now in this offense. So those are my spots Virginia Tech off the Hail Mary at Stanford, Alabama off of the incredible win at Vandy, Arizona versus Texas Tech off the win over Utah, Sam Houston State beat Texas State, UNLV off of the domination and dismantling of Fresno. Thank you very much for the easy winner. And then Duke coming back to beat UNC. By the way, if you're wondering, Kentucky would have been on the list, but they have a bye week this week. All right, couple look ahead spots just real quickly heading into next week. October 12th is a loaded week where we've got Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, USC, Red River, Texas, Oklahoma, and Ole Miss at LSU. Texas and Oklahoma both are on a bye, Adam, so they're not on this list. USC, they beat Wisconsin. They come back. They look great in the second half. They get the cover. Sorry to Heumann. So that was a best bet in a game that was shown on bad beats there. It was 28-10. They come back to win. And now they go to Minnesota. Now, you can say Minnesota, how are they dealing with the tough loss there to Michigan and the onside kick, all of that. I'm tempted to take another ugly home dog here in the Golden Gophers as USC, weird travel, night game there, and then they play Penn State next week. So a little bit of a look-ahead spot here for USC. Gophers catch an 8.5.
Yeah, this one is admittedly not a game that's super strong on my radar because, you know, it is kind of a weird trip for USC. At least it is a night game. They get to play in primetime, so, you know, kind of makes things a little bit easier, I think. I still don't know what the hell Minnesota is. Like, you know, last week, the 21 points in the fourth quarter to make that thing look a lot closer than it really was throughout the majority of the game. Max Brosmer is better than really any quarterback I think they've had over the last several years. He's better than Tanner Morgan. He's better than Kelly Akmanis. The running game is still solid with Darius Taylor, but there's just maybe Minnesota's just not as strong defensively, I guess, at this point in time than they kind of used to be. Also, it's kind of a tough place to recruit if you're PJ Fleck. So, I don't know. USC just has a big talent advantage, I think, in this game. But at the same time, the Trojans don't feel super trustworthy. I mean, we've seen now for 2 weeks straight that Michigan cannot throw a forward pass, like, at all whatsoever. And USC lost that game. So, it's a big number to lay on the road, I think.
Penn State is playing UCLA. No thanks. I'd rather not get involved with a look-ahead spot for Penn State. They're laying 28 against a terrible team in UCLA. And then Ohio State at Oregon. Primetime game, Adam. Next Saturday in Autzen, Oregon plays Sparty Party this week. Michigan State was driving at times against Ohio State, but some inopportune fumbles. Another game that was shown on bad beats as Michigan State, I think, catching 12 in the first half, and the Jeremiah Smith circus touchdown put an end to that. And then Ohio State plays Iowa in a spot where Iowa will be coming off a bye here. So Ohio State laying 19.5-20 against Iowa. Oregon laying 24 against Michigan State. Both at home, both peeking maybe ahead to next week at all?
Well, I mean, Will Howard's obviously banged up a little bit now after leaving that game last week against Michigan State for a little while. This feels like a Ryan Day special where Iowa hangs around for way too damn long because Ohio State is typically a slow starting team. Now, we'll see if that changes with Chip Kelly as the OC. Because Day, it feels like he just wouldn't take shots early on in the game. You know, that's just kind of what it felt like. So I think Iowa's probably the play here in this one. Also, you're getting three touchdowns with a total in the mid-40s. So, you know, I think Iowa probably covers this number, and Ohio State just kind of dicks around, for lack of a better term. They're looking ahead to Oregon. I mean, there's no question about that. Yeah, I would say so. But again, Will Howard being banged up, like, they're not going to put him in any compromising situation if they can help it. I think you get a lot of Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins in this game, which, again, kind of lends itself towards taking a three-touchdown dog with a low-scoring expectation.
Yeah, we'll see where this number ultimately goes, but Iowa's certainly something for me to keep an eye on. Sitting there 20 right now are the Hawkeyes. Do we get any higher? We will see, but Ohio State, the look ahead line was 23. So you have seen the market come down a little bit. There were 21s out there. Those have been scooped up. We'll see if we get back to 21 at some point. All right. That's going to do it for the podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Another week in the top 200 of the Sports Podcast. Thank you to all of you. We'll be back on Thursday with our Week 6 preview and best bets. As always, make sure to head on to VSiN.com. Everything we've got going, as Adam alluded to earlier in the podcast, all of the great content out there, our NBA betting guide coming out in a little over a week. For Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.